Well, for those who are visiting or maybe don't know who I am, or maybe those who are not visiting, if you don't know who I am, I'm your pastor. And I've been gone for a while, it's true. And so I'm so happy to be back here, back home with all of you face to face after my 3 months away on my sabbatical. And I need to begin by simply offering a heartfelt word of thanks to Father Infinger, who I think led things here in town beautifully while I was gone. He gave me his whole three-hour-long report yesterday, had a nice visit, and was so pleased to hear all that he's been doing, along with Father Buting, and then our staff and volunteers. Everyone has just come forward, it seems, and done so many great things, as usual, here. So I'm very grateful. I couldn't have gone away and done what I did without everybody stepping in to make that possible. So what a blessing you are and continue to be. So first off, thank you very much. Secondly, there'll be lots of stories about the sabbatical as time passes. And indeed, if you'll notice in the bulletin and website and all of our social media, I have presentations coming up. They're scheduled this month in November, which should be really fun. I have lots of things to talk about, share. So we'll get to all of that. But today, anyhow, maybe a couple little stories that come to bear on our readings. And I think one will zero in especially on the first reading from the book of the prophet Habakkuk. We say about Habakkuk. Habakkuk is a little obscure. He appears rarely in the lectionary. I think this is actually the only Sunday in the whole cycle that he appears. And the thing about it is, you know, he's writing in a time, probably a very difficult period in Israel's history, just before the exile. And quite likely what's happened right around the time of this writing is that their good king Josiah, who they come to appreciate as a nation, he's just been killed in a battle. And their spirits were crushed as a people. So there was turmoil, there was challenge, there was difficulty, and their hearts were full of lots of questions. It was something like a crisis of faith, you might say, for the nation. And so Habakkuk writes in that spirit, asking God from his heart, "Where are you, Lord? Why permit such things to happen? Why the violence? Why the challenge? Why the difficulty? Have you forgotten us? And where is all of this going? Deep questions, Lord, we have on our hearts. Where are you and what does it all mean?" That's a theme that's common throughout the entire scriptural history of the Old Testament, through the New Testament too, and indeed even to our day when there's so much strife around us, it seems all the time the themes are the same. We might say, like Habakkuk, "God, where are you in all of these situations?" In response, and I think that the response is a lot of the reason why the church wants this in a lectionary cycle, God says to Habakkuk, "Do not doubt that I still have great things in mind for my nation, for my people. There's a vision that I have of glory and of mercy and justice and peace and a time when hearts will be full of my covenant and promise." He says to Habakkuk, "This is the vision of my glory. I want you to have it and share it and let it come to fulfillment in its own time. And as that happens, your faith will be deepened. Your faith will be deepened. So let your faith," he says to Habakkuk, "rest on my promise. And let that promise inspire not just you, but the nations around you as a sign of hope for all those who need it." In the Gospel from Luke, a similar kind of an idea going on. The Lord speaks of faith and its centrality and how it can deepen as we let his plan unfold in our hearts and lives. In spite of all that seems contrary, God says, "I'm always at work below the surface, lifting you up in grace and in my glory." So faith is very much at work in these readings, especially a vision that inspires. In Habakkuk's idea, let the vision inspire and lift your hearts. So with that in mind, a little vision that inspires, right? Perhaps a little story from my time away. Again, there's lots to follow, but for another day. For today anyway, I spent July, most of July, at a monastery in Vienna, outside of Vienna, with the Cistercians who were there. Wonderful time to pray. And over the mornings, when I would eat with the Cistercian priests, we talked about the church in Germany, in Austria, in the Alpine territories, and we kind of compared notes, you might say, about how things are going here and over there. And over some mornings, some very fascinating things became clear, and I talked a lot about here, as you might imagine. So, for example, they would ask me in the American church, "How's it going?" They'd say to me, "How is your mass attendance?" They'd say, "How many people come into your mass on a weekend, Father Nathan?" So I'd say, "Well, probably about maybe like 25, 30% of people come, you know, to my masses." And they were astonished to hear this. They were astounded because in those territories, they have maybe 5% who come on a weekend on a regular basis. It's very, very low. And their hearts are heavy because of this. So they say to me in response, you know, how is it that at your place, you know, you have such a high number of attendees? I say, because they have an outstanding, articulate, and intelligent pastor. To which they responded half around the world, isn't Father Infanger there? Yeah, that's right. No, I say, because we have faith. The faith is alive here, and the faith in our parishes is very, very strong, because it has to be in America. We have all this competition with evangelical groups and other things happening, so the people who come, I said, understand that this is worth investing in, and they got to kind of step it up because of all the things that can take us away. So it leads to, I think, a deep heart of faith in our people. It's not about me at all. It's about the Lord in their hearts, and it's a good thing. So they were tremendously impressed by that. That here we have beautiful numbers of faith in our parishes. Now, it's not like everything is bad over there. In my presentations, I'll talk about good things, but their life is so different over there than ours in their communities. It's so nice this morning to see children at Mass. There are so few children over there in these territories, and there are so few families. So I said, this is a vibrant, lively place of faith. They said, what else do you do in your parish? You just have Mass? I said, no. I said, we do all kinds of things. So, for example, I said, I get, for example, on Sunday mornings, first Sunday of the month, and Wednesday evenings to run our Rooted program with our families. And they want to know all about that. So I said, what we are blessed to do at our Family Faith Formation program is to get in our church building and school, parents together with their kids, learning about faith, learning about the gospel and catechetics and the liturgical year and the sacraments and the saints. And I get to spend time as a pastor talking to parents directly for probably half hour, 45 minutes just to teach them. And God, they actually listen, at least I think they do, right? They were so impressed by this too, that we could do those things here, that our parents would come, and that our parents love spending time with their kids as a family, learning about the faith, not just by themselves, but as a household, and they grow together. I said, this is the way of the future of catechetics, and we're leading the charge here. And they said, you're right. You are. That is the future. And they agreed. They said, what else do you do? I said, we're blessed in our parish to run our own school. They said, you got your own school? I said, yes. They said, how do you pull that off? I said, I don't know. What do you do there? I said, we teach them religion. And we have a classroom setting led by very fine teachers and supported by really hardworking parents who do give money to come here, where our kids learn about values and virtue and ethics and the saints and the church, and they come to school masses and they have adoration and rosary and prayer time, and we teach the priests in the classroom, and this is a great part of our ministry here. We are able to do this in my parish, and it's a wonderful, wonderful blessing for our entire community because it's a focal point for all these connections of families to help each other keep themselves walking together in the faith. How nice to see parents, you know, on recess duty in the parking lot, whatever, comparing notes, talking about having kids, walking the walk of faith. You all hold each other up. You are school families in your community that centers on this building down the hill. So I run a daycare for working parents who can't be with their kids. We do all these things here. Or as the breakfast conversations continued, more things tumble out. Journey program, I talked about that. So like right now, well, just a bit ago at St. Mary's, we had a journey mass this morning. I talked about that at these masses with our special needs adults and students. They're taught the faith. They're welcomed as valuable members of the community. They're not pushed to the side. And our volunteers love to help these people out. Our community loves to support these people. We lift them up as the gifts of God that they are and a pro-life message in our culture that needs to hear it. It's a beautiful part of our outreach. So I talked about that. And I also explained, as more oatmeal breakfast conversations took place, that part of why I could go away for a couple of months and be gone was because I knew that back home, we had a small army every single day of people who go out to our hospitals, our nursing homes, our shut-ins are homebound, and they talk to them and visit with them because I can't get to all those places. And they bring communion, and they bring grace, and they pray, and they help people who would otherwise be alone all day have a companion, have a help, have a support, and know that the church family has not forgotten about them. They're connected to us by our homebound volunteers all across town. You do all of those things. So I said, I could go away knowing that when I was gone, it would be in good hands because people there are so dedicated because of what they do. So all this takes place in our morning conversations. This is very different than their parish life over there. The American parish experience, as I learned in my travels, is a dynamic place of life and grace and goodness. And we are, in many respects, for all of our problems here, and there are lots of them, it's true, we are still very much the envy of the rest of the world for what we do in our parish structures. So they asked me, of course, how do you pay for all of that? What do you do? I said, I got to spend a lot of time fundraising. It's really true, because over there, by and large, they're supported by taxes. They have a tax cut that they get in their congregations, and so the idea of fundraising donations is very different for them than it is here. It's almost non-existent. So they said to me, we're so sad that you have to spend all of your time asking for money. It sounds like you must ask for a ton of money to run all those things. I said, well, here's the thing. I said, first of all, I said, in our country, because of America's long tradition of legal church and state separation, I get no government help. And all of our people know that. And so part of why we can do all these things is because people give generously, because they realize if they don't, we're not going to be here. I have no backstop holding me up like you do here in these territories. So everyone understands that we have to own the mission together and push it forward together, and everyone's got to give something. If it isn't money, it's prayer, or it's time, or it's whatever they can. So it leads to a very lively culture because everyone's got to own it, or they know we're not going to be here anymore. And they're touched by the good things that we do. They love it. So I said, you might think that's a scandal or a shame that we don't get a handout to stay open. I think, I told them, it breeds life and ownership and faith and grace and goodness. And I said, besides that, I said, the fact is, yes, I spent time asking for money, and sometimes we have to cut things, and sometimes things don't work, but the fact of the matter is, it deepens my faith. And I have the blessing, I said, that you're never going to have in your position in those countries of receiving donations of joy. How fortunate I am when all of you, and many of you do this, come to me and say, I want to give this to the church, Father. I want to support this ministry. I want to do this thing for our daycare or for our school or for this program. You know, take this for whatever you're working on this week. And there's such joy in your hearts and in your eyes and yourselves when you give. So I said to my Cistercian friends, I am blessed to witness that and receive it and be enlivened by that in ways you're just not going to have in your situation. So yeah, we work for our money, but I get to watch people's joy as they give it over because they realize it's just what we're supposed to do. Generous people are happier, more lively, faithful people. It's a fact. So I said, I'm very blessed. I'm very blessed, and we are here. So when all this was done, we had a lot of conversations like this, and I really did say all these things, it is true. You know, they said to me, at least in this part of the world that I was in, others, different conversation, they said, we look to the American church. We are inspired by your example. We watch the videos of your pastors back home who give catechetical talks, and the American church, they say, gives us hope in our part of the world where things are so hard and so many things are so different, and the livelihood is just not there. So they thank me for the witness and for your example. So long story short, long story short, in the spirit of Habakkuk, people need a vision that inspires, don't they? Something that kind of lifts them up and carries them forward when they wonder, where is God at work and all the process of things that can be so hard? And in your way, through my explanation, for my friends in Austria, you become something like Habakkuk's vision of faith. You inspire them. And they say, we look to you. And you give us hope, and we want what you have. And it sounds like, Father, you're very blessed to be where you are in a place that does so much good for so many people in so many ways. I said, yes, I am. We work hard for it, and God does great things through it. So this is how it all comes together. At the heart of it, to the gospel in Habakkuk, really is faith, right? You wouldn't do any of this stuff. You wouldn't own the mission or give anything if you didn't believe. We have to believe it. And when we believe, it produces wonderful, wonderful fruit. So all that is a good, you know, lead-in to our fall process here in West Bend that we've done years and years and years now of praying about and thinking about our ongoing dedication to the mission and ministries here in the parishes. This is not a new thing. I think this year we're probably a little more focused about it than in prior years. So on Monday, tomorrow, I'm going to get in the mail, and you all will too, this snazzy little packet with our annual fall appeal materials in it. And in the spirit of my stories this morning, of all the good we do around here and of the inspiration that we really are to our friends around the world now, what I really want all of us to do this week is take that packet and open it and read through it and to pray about our commitment for the parish and the fact that everybody here has to own that. And we know why it matters, right? Because like I just said, we do great things here in America with our generosity. And then next weekend, we all come back. Next weekend will be a nice celebration of our dedication to the parish and our ministries. It'll be a really nice time. We have nice things planned for next weekend. So over the week, we'll pray about it. Next weekend, we'll think about it together as a family. We'll celebrate all these things around the altar of the Lord. So that's kind of what's going on here in the next couple of weeks. And again, that's not new for us per se, because every year, as I told my friends in Germany, this is what we have to do. This is how it all runs. This is how it works. And they're very impressed by that, too, that people would give in the way that we do. So I hope that you think about it. And again, I just want to thank you in advance for being, like I said, an inspiration to people who you'll never actually meet in person, most of you, but they know about us now because of me. And I said nice things about you. And all of them are true. They really are true. So our theme, right, know him, love him, serve him, this is what it means. Because we know him, we love him. To love him means to give, to serve, and to let all these things continue to flourish in grace in so many wonderful ways. So I thank you for your time this week to pray about it. I thank you for next weekend in advance, and I'm looking forward to that next weekend. We're all going to be back here again to celebrate it. And thank you again for being inspiring people to me and to people around the world.